What's up, guys? It is a special edition. I know we've got the on-the-fly banners up. We're still working on getting the Triple Threat main event. And Triple Threat main event is just a sidecast for on-the-fly productions. But tonight, a special episode of the Triple Threat main event. With us tonight is the son of the legendary Tampa Athletic Hall of Fame, WWE Hall of Fame, the one and only Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff. With me tonight is his son, Mr. Travis Orndorff. Welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thank you for having me on, Stevie. I've been fortunate recently to do a few of these and share my dad's story and really kind of my healing from his passing. So as we share his legacy online, this is very much an extension, and I'm grateful to have, you know, the platform I have to share these stories. So thank you for having me on.
Hey, thank you for coming on. It is an honor. You're like we talked about a little bit when I was messaging you, and we talked a little bit before we went on the air. When I got into wrestling, you know, we're in Crockett country down here. So we saw maybe once a week, and lucky if we saw twice a week with the Saturday Night's main event, WWF back then. But when I got into it, your dad was teaming with Hulk Hogan. And it wasn't very, even for, at that time, I was, 11 or 12. And I'm, buying into the whole thing, like a lot of kids. It's real. Oh, gosh, they really hate each other. They like each other. But it wasn't hard to see at that time what your dad was going to do. The heel turn was coming. The phone call that Hogan wouldn't answer because he was too busy lifting weights. And then the heel, the fabulous, probably, that was probably the first turn I ever witnessed that when I was watching was him turn on your dad like that. But, I mean, what a great career this Mr. Orndorff had. And I always went by, this was one guy that as long as I watched him, and I don't know, you know, going back, I'm assuming from when he started, I think he got the Mr. Wonderful name when he came to WWF, right?
Yes. And first of all, you tempted me. You don't realize it, but you said what an honor. And all I could think about was that promo with Mean Gene. And I want to go, well, you should be, you know what? You should be honored. Like, yeah. Of course you're honored. You should be, you know, that's where my mind goes. Like, I was like, bite your tongue, let him finish.
You should have done it. You should have finished
what he's saying, but every part of me wanted exactly to, I just wanted to go like this and be like, of course you're honored there, Stevie. Of course you're honored. You should be. And you know, I'm glad you're grateful, but everybody's grateful to see me now. Of course.
I would have knew right where you were going with that.
Every once in a while, this happened a lot on the road, and I promise we'll get back to your story, but we would be on the road, and you know, that's how, like, it sounds like that was kind of mine and my dad's love language, you know, was being on the road and making up these, you know, ridiculous comments of things to say that were arrogant. And I have always been a fairly articulate individual, never short of words. And even though I was young, I got to share a lot of that with him. So that was, I appreciated that. It brought me back for a second to some of the odd things that, most of that, by the way, was method acting. Like, that is how he, you know, sometimes he acted. So it wasn't that far-fetched for him to do that. But, you know, dad's career and even the heel turn, you know, that was, I think it was obvious more so, at least in my mind, because reflecting from the old to the new, that it was coming because you got to see it out on television. Yeah. And there was a delay between that event and then the match. So there was a lot more buildup. And the reason being is, but to your point, like, these shows didn't come on but once a week. It's not now where you've got the internet, you've got Monday Night Raw, you got Thursday Night SmackDown. Like, they're telling you in a press conference which matches are going to be happening, you know, and exploring kind of, you know, what the expectations are. And to the point that even, you know, recently there appears to be a change in creative direction with this WrestleMania. So those things, you know, what I would say is that turn on television, to my knowledge, was the first one. But when you're building a national brand, that buildup was a very short buildup, depending on where you lived in the country and your access to television. But it could be very long if you lived on the East Coast and the Northeast, because those shows came fairly rapidly. And so it's funny to hear different versions of, oh, I saw it coming. And I'm like, well, I mean, you waited 3 weeks. Of course you did. Right. You had time to process it.
Yeah.
And there was so much kayfabe at the time, but those guys were doing that wrestling match. You might have seen it on a Saturday, but it might have shown in a high school gym. You know, everything wasn't in Madison Square Garden. It wasn't all in a Coliseum. They were in these smaller towns, and they would repeat these matches over and over, and sometimes spread the talent out. But what I would tell you is, and I was present, but I was so young, I don't recall. Right. When those turns happened in the territories and somebody turned from babyface to heel, I remember Dad telling me stories of things happening. So I was 21. This is back when I was drinking. I'm sober now, but I remember sitting with him, like, when I'm 21 years old, and I had to talk him into taking me out for a beer on my 21st birthday, because he never drank around me, because, you know, we had some history of alcoholism. So he never wanted to, you know, encourage that behavior. I think I can recall maybe once or twice between, you know, birth to 21 that I saw him drink. And so we get there, and the crazy thing is he orders Jack Daniels, and I'm like, what? Like, that blew my mind. But I remember asking him, I'm like, Dad, we had talked about the emotional stuff, some of the actual interactions, the people. But there were conversations that we had that got much deeper as I got older, certainly, that I could reflect on and go, Dad, what happened back then? I was there, but I don't, you know, I didn't have a full understanding. I saw maybe the temper or the different things that came out of it. And, you know, every scar that he had on his face was like, it was from a beer bottle from a grandmother in Shreveport, Louisiana, after a heel turn. Like, you know, he would recall times where, you know, darts would get thrown in, into the ring, and beer bottles, and you know, there's an article of how bad the heat was back then, just to give you an idea. Dad was leaving somewhere, and this was early 80s, and somebody hit him from behind, and Dad turned around and popped the guy. And so I still have the article, and it was like an 82 year old man like, it wasn't good. And, you know, he's in the hospital, and like, they show him with tubes, and I'm like, and I still have the news article with the memorabilia that I do have. And, you know, those were different times. Even though at your age you understood and you saw it coming, there was a population that didn't, and there was a population that were genuinely heartbroken, because one, Hulk Hogan, at that time was represented, you know, the American flag, and, you know, this is during the Reagan administration, and it's red, white, and blue, and so Dad turned on America. You know, it wasn't that he's turned on Hulk Hogan. He turned on America. And, you know, Hogan was in the Sylvester Stallone, you know, Rocky III. Yeah. And, you know, all of that buildup, all of that momentum, and all the kind of the nuances and the naivety of the people during that time. So it was a mixed bag, whether you saw it coming or not, depending on how many shows you caught. Because it was possible, because there was no DVR, you know, people were still putting on VHS. It was possible you missed a show and there was no other way to watch it. You had to be in front of your television, or you didn't get to see it. So you would read about it in Pro Wrestling Illustrated. And when you're reading that and you're not seeing it, it becomes way more believable because it's in print.
Yep.
And you're waiting for that next thing, but you're not there seeing it. You're not seeing the emotions, the way dad's sitting there so frustrated, like you're reading about it. And that doesn't hit the same as a video does. So there was a lot of people that were really pissed. And I did, to this day, I joke. I see it, you know, when we post it on dad's legacy sites, people will talk about how devastating that was as a child. And I'm like, I should have been like a counselor, because I would have been the most wonderful, pun intended, therapist to walk people through their childhood trauma of that event alone. I could have made an entire career off of, you know, dad's turning on Hogan and any other crazy thing that happened in wrestling.
But, you know, with your dad, and your dad was, you talk about that promo with Mean Gene, which I've watched I don't know how many times, and it cracks Mean Gene up. And you know, one of the greatest wrestling commentators of all time is Mean Gene, but he would lose it every once in a while.
They tried to get him to do that. You know right? Yeah. Like, that was their goal, was can I go so far that it's believable, but that Gene can't keep a straight face. And Dad received an award at the Cauliflower. I've been fortunate through the years that one, my dad and I were best friends. Right. And when these different events came up, and I'm talking about when I was even young, he wrestled in Australia for almost a full month. And my mom didn't go. I did. Wow. You know, so when dad got inducted to the WWE Hall of Fame, and I think it was 2005, 2006, it all runs together. I went, not my mom. I'm in the crowd, you know, and I went with dad. And when dad got the award in the Cauliflower Alley Club, I went and presented his award. So in those different times, you know, there's the funny jokes of the times when I was young and I was around the boys, but I'm so naive and young. They looked at me like, you know, in many ways they treated me like what I would say would be like a little brother, or, you know, like maybe even somewhat reminiscing on like protecting me like they're their own child, because a lot of them had girls. You know, Roddy had girls. He couldn't bring those girls. Like, that wasn't happening. There was, I fit that in between of being a boy and being just enough of age. But I got the opportunity at these different events throughout the years, like at the WWE Hall of Fame. You know, people were like, well, you've been to WrestleMania. And I'm like, I was in the green room the entire time, sitting with Bobby Heenan, listening to stories that I was now old enough to hear. When we went to Cauliflower Alley Club, me and Brian Blair and my dad and I had brought a friend with me, Will. I'm sitting there listening to stories from Brian about Japan. And, you know, and then later that night, you know, I'm sitting down with Mean Gene and he's telling me stories about different promos dad cut and, you know, how they messed with him and sometimes would pinch him, you know, just different. Like, they had so much fun. They were like kids in a candy shop doing that job, especially at that level.
Yeah, you talk about the Hall of Fame induction, and I just watched that this past weekend. And how fitting was it for him to have the Brain introduce him, which, you know, you could tell the Brain was having his issues with his voice at the time. And then your dad comes off and cuts like a heel promo when he does the speech, which I thought was great. And as far as babyface or heel, I actually think your dad was a better heel. I don't know if he preferred being a heel over a babyface, but most guys do. Most of the wrestlers do. Did you think your dad would rather be a heel than a babyface?
No question. That's not even like it. That is a he said it, that he preferred being a heel.
Right.
He believed, one, that's where the money was at. Like there was a sustainable career as a bad guy, because, you know, if anything, eventually the people will turn on you. So you're, when they're already mad at you, you, all you have to do is sustain it. And the reality is there's a lot more passion in most cases. And this can be unfortunate in society. There's a lot more passion behind who we hate. And it's such a motivating force in our lives. And it can, in many ways, overshadow who we love. Trauma, resentment, those things destroy lives no matter how much an individual loves you. So, I always believed when he was a heel and he got to be arrogant. And this is just, you know, this is my psychoanalyzing wrestling and my dad, and, you know, I've been in enough therapy to talk about it. The Mr. Wonderful, which, by the way, he was named, going back to what we were talking about, he was named, actually, Afa and Sika called him that.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, that was, now, my mom is the one that came up with the number Wonderful, but it was Afa and Sika that came up with that name. And prior to that, and I know you do, in the older matches and even up until that time, he had the OP on his trunks instead of PO. And Junkyard Dog called him Outpatient because he was so crazy when he was in the ring. And so it's funny how, and I'll tell you this is something most people don't know. Brian Blair, when he would call the house and you know, daddy called him Beeper. I have no idea why his nickname was Beeper, but when Brian would call, he would be like, "Where's Oscar from Oscar the Grouch from the Muppets?" Yeah. So dad was not like my experience with him as his child, I saw him be angry and only later in life did he get diagnosed as bipolar. And I share that just because, not to embarrass him, but just in case somebody deals with that, like that's not something to be ashamed of. No. It's something he dealt with and honestly, for many reasons and from what I got to experience, he was able to battle that demon, but knowing that diagnosis later on very much contributed to him liking being a heel because he didn't have to control his emotions. He didn't have to mask. The Mr. Wonderful persona in many ways, because he had had kind of a rough upbringing and, you know, experienced some things most kids shouldn't, whether it be just growing up without a lot of, he grew up in a poor part of Florida in a trailer park. And so that to me was always he built his body to get out of the trailer parks. And, you know, he saw sports as something, one, he was good at, and two, something he could invest himself in that got him out of the situation he was in, being poor and growing up in a, you know, that area of Florida. So that persona of, I've always said it protected the inner child that had to deal with some things most kids, no kid should. And not that it was all bad. He was close with his father, but, you know, his dad was a drinker. And so, you know, he would be at those same bars getting his dad from the bar on the weekends. And in that same parking lot, he was having bare knuckle fights for money.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, there's tough guys and then there's guys that did it. You know, there's some tough guys out there, strong. But you know, Mike Tyson says, you know, the whole plan changes when you get punched in the mouth. Well, dad experienced that. And so that's why, you know, those fights that happened were because he was bipolar and he could turn quick. Had anger, had those issues. I saw it. I saw it. Now, he was never physical with me. So let's get that clear. I think I got one spanking I probably needed more.
Oh,
I got one in my life that I recall. Every other time I did something I shouldn't do or something happened, it was a conversation. And I mean, even when I was, I think the worst punishment I got when I was seven was like Tabasco, because I said a cuss word at school, you know, and, you know, and of course, you know, within a short period of time, I like hot sauce. So it was, you know, and so then we switched to like those, he switched to like the jalapeno slices out of the jar, you know, like that was, it was a conversation. I mean, even when I was 16 years old, I got a speeding ticket and and I got pulled over and they thought I was my brother. And I have an older brother that's 10 years older than me. And his name is Paul Parlett Orndorff III. So they thought I was my brother who had gotten in some trouble. And so I got pulled over at gunpoint.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, it was crazy. And my best friend was with me. And luckily his mom like pulled up, we were moving him. And so not only did it look like I was my brother, but it looked like I had just robbed a house.
Oh, God.
And so we got pulled over and luckily she got out of the car and was like, yo, this is Travis, but they were wondering where my brother was. And I remember going to my dad and telling him about it. And he goes, did you do it? And I go, yes, sir. And he said, what happened? And I told him. And then dad said, okay, thank you for telling me. You were honest. That's all I need to know. And that was the rule around the house. Yeah. Be honest with me and we can deal with it. Lie to me and I'm done. And dad went with me to the courthouse and said, you know, like got me out of the ticket because of how it was handled and the fact that they didn't clock me with a gun. It was a really small town. They didn't clock me with a radar. So he got thrown out by the judge.
How did they know you were speeding?
They got behind me.
Oh, okay.
It was a small town in Palmetto, Georgia. It's like one highway 29 and it went from like 55. Just one of those towns went from 55 to 25 in like 100 feet. Yeah. And so, yeah. And, you know, of course, you know, I'm driving, I'm 16 and I'm not paying attention. Yeah. And so, but, you know, I had to pay the fine, but I didn't get a ticket.
Well, that's good. Especially at 16.
Yes, it was. It didn't break my heart, I assure you.
So growing up, you know, you said you were around your dad a lot. What's one of your first memories of when you realized who your dad was, that he was in this business?
I don't remember a time I didn't know. Okay. Because so I was born in 78. And I think dad, you know, we moved a bunch.
Yeah.
So I was born in Tampa. Dad actually isn't from Tampa. He's from Winchester, but they, you know, hailed him from Tampa, Florida, because that was a name recognition. And when he wrestled in Florida, then, you know, it was connected to him going to the University of Tampa. And, you know, the Brandon Bull is because he went to Brandon High School in Brandon, Florida. But I was actually born in Tampa. Now, I'm going to go off for a second, but it's a funny story. So when I was like 8 or 9 years old, there was that movie called Switched at Birth. And, you know, people used to ask me, like, well, who are you? Because you don't look like your dad. And I'm like, how many people look like my dad at seven? I was born at the same hospital and I remember asking my mom, I'm like, are y'all sure? Like I'm dad's son. Cause I just saw this movie and that's the same hospital. And she's like, shut up, you know, but you know, like we had lived and these are very, very, you know, I don't have a memory that far back. But I lived where we lived in Florida, Louisiana, Oklahoma, Tennessee, North Carolina, and then we settled in Georgia when I was like five.
Where did y'all live at in North Carolina?
I do not recall. I just know I had asked my mom once and my dad, you know, where had I lived, you know, because I knew we hit these territories. I'm like, how many places was I at before, you know, I recalled these memories and they started naming them off and I was like, oh. And but, you know, it's funny, obviously, Wikipedia later, I get to see all these territories. I'm like, OK, that makes complete sense. Yeah. But we moved to a small town. We lived in Riverdale, Georgia, just south of the airport in an apartment complex, I think for a year right before dad went to WWF. And then when dad went to WWF, we bought a small house that, you know, he stayed at until he came to live with me at the end. And he passed. He and my mom's and family still live in that house now. We bought a little house in Fayetteville. And So there was a couple of towns to choose from back then, because Atlanta obviously wasn't the Atlanta we know today, where, you know, an hour drive from Atlanta in Atlanta is an hour drive. Yeah. You know, you it's just traffic is crazy. And we had a choice between Marietta, Georgia, which is now a very, very affluent town, and this small town in Fayetteville. And we chose the smaller town because it was close to the airport.
Right.
And so from that point, like when we moved into places, so the apartment complex or the house in Fayetteville, even if my dad did not present it, people knew he was famous. So, you know, my interactions, the first thing, you know, it had already gotten around the rumor mill. People knew, the kids knew, your dad's famous and he does this. Whether they watched wrestling or not, there was an attachment to he's famous. Right. So it was always there. The funny thing is, people will ask me often, you know, what did the kids say? And you know, the kids were kids. You know, I didn't grow up around kids that were really, you know, a couple of them were, but not a lot of them weren't real, real into wrestling because we were so young. I mean, my peers, none of them were, you know, back then your kids weren't allowed to watch it.
Right.
You know, so I was fortunate in that aspect. And I had gone to a small Montessori school and then another private school. And so, you know, most of my teachers were, you know, hippies and yogas and you know, they weren't wrestling fans. So it wasn't really, if I had to tell you, I remember a moment when I got an idea of how big he was. I think I was 5 years old. I know I was. And I played baseball. And, you know, I didn't think anything, like, you don't reflect on how much he was in and around until you get older. And, like, I didn't hang out with other kids that were around their parents all the time. So that was just normal to me. But there was a Little League World Series we were in. But even before that, when dad would come, you know, the funny part of it is, you know, he would come and when I was probably 12 or 13, I played catcher. And so he would park behind the backstop and he'd be in a pair of shorts in the summer, tanning in our lawn chair in the back of his truck. but I can remember being on the baseball field and looking over to the stands and seeing a line of people trying to get autographs. Wow. When I'm 5 years old. That would happen a little bit younger than that. So I think I was aware, but there's a very distinct memory of, I remember after the game going, "Dad, did you get to watch me?" And he was like, "Yes," because he would make a point to go, "My son's on the field," or "He's up to bat," or, but I remember looking back a bunch to see if he was watching me. And I think it was a little bit different because no other parent had to worry about that. Unless their parent was in line to get my dad's autograph, which was very often as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you talked about being on the road with him and of course I'm sure you got to see some things and talk to some guys back there. What was it like being on the road all that time with your dad?
Here's the thing about it. And it's just the truth. I wasn't a wrestling fan. And, you know, I didn't watch wrestling. It was his job. I mean, we went to the Omni and watched, you know, the WrestleMania. But I was into Star Wars and,
oh yeah,
and Nintendo. And, you know, I played that pro wrestling game because they didn't have another version when I was a kid, you know. So being on the road with him had nothing to do with fame, fortune, wrestling matches. I was just with my daddy. Exactly. And I got to spend time with him and we got to be alone together. And, you know, we, you know, going to the hotel room, stopping in different places to eat. I do mean to be funny, but I also don't mean to be funny. But, you know, people are like, "What was it like being around these wrestlers?" And I'm like, "Disgusting. That was disgusting. I was in a dressing room. They were naked and sweaty coming out of a shower." Like, those weren't, they weren't like, you know, number one, I didn't want to see naked men at 5 years old. But number two, they were kind of gross. You know, like, it wasn't a pretty sight. So in no way was I like, "Oh, that's my hero." I'd seen them naked. You know, and so I, like, I'm not even joking. It is a, that's a true statement. Like, it's a funny way to say it, but it's the truth. Like, my interactions with those folks was so human. Like, they didn't have the tights on. They were wearing sweatpants. You know, they were wearing their tennis shoes. They were playing poker. They were talking smack to each other. You know, the
real people.
They weren't cutting promos in the bathroom. You know, and even when they talked about matches, you know, Dad would, so I can remember times when he was wrestling Hogan and I was on the road, and like, they would meet up over, like, and they would meet somewhere in the back of the, you know, because they all had different dressing rooms, different places. They would meet in the back in the tunnels to talk about the match. And I can remember sitting there hearing them go, boom, 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 we're going to spot this, and boom, boom, boom. Like, so I heard that. I remember watching matches on TV, and I, to this day, struggle watching them, not because they're bad or good. I have no opinion. It's all I can hear in my voice is Dad saying, the camera's here, the voice is here, you know, like all these different things that the way they described it, watching it, that's all I ever knew. So I'm by no means somebody that can tell you, you know, anything about matches, but I do hear my daddy's voice.
Yeah.
So being on the road was more about a father and son spending time together than it was anything about wrestling. Now the interactions I had, there were people, and I've said this, like, growing up, Junkyard Dog was my favorite wrestler. And it was because I spent time with him. Like, right. He sat with me when my dad was in matches because they were close. And so, like, it wasn't that he was my favorite wrestler. He's my favorite human being I interacted with. You know, just like you have a favorite coach, or, you know, it was somebody that treated me like I was a human and made me feel safe, and played poker with me. And, you know, they taught me different card games. And so that to me was father and son time, as much as it was wrestling and all these, like, that was something he did for an hour. Most of the time we were in a car, a bus, a plane, you know, a Holiday Inn. You know, we didn't go see sights. You know, we went from town to town. I remember when I, in fact, just to share, like, there were towns I went into, it's funny what you start to remember when people start to ask questions. But as I've reflected, there were towns I went into where there was somebody that he trusted that would take me to go see something, like in Philadelphia, the Liberty Bell. And we went to New York, and I went to the Statue of Liberty and climbed up, you know, almost to the top before I was like, I'm done. Let's go back down. I'm not big on heights. I'm not big on heights. And my dad and I think it's his fault. Like, I can't stand snakes. I can't even watch that scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark. I went hunting with a buddy of mine, and he pulled up, like, we were tearing down an old hunting stand, and I'm not a big hunter or anything. I'm not a hunter at all. I'm a pacifist. But he picked up one of the, you know, pieces of plywood, and there was a snake under it. And I mean, they were like, where'd Travis go? And I'm like, I'm over here. And I'm like, I ran in, like, you know, the snake boots, you know, rubber boots, like a quarter of a mile to get away from that thing. So the time on the road that we experienced, like, let me give you a short version. If I ever have a short version, I don't think I have. But the one of the things I can remember is, you know, there were events that Dad would miss because of work. But an example would be, I was in karate as a kid, and I did, you know, I got my junior black belt, and, you know, obviously Dad was really proud of that. But I won a bunch of tournaments, and I can recall, you know, going to the Omni in Atlanta after I'd won this tournament, and I got, you know, I get there in my gi, and I'm bringing in my first place trophy and third place trophy for forms. And, you know, I got to bring that to the arena, and I had guys cheer me when I came in. Now Bobby Heenan turned around and did a prank on me 2 seconds later. And just so you know, I don't care how old you are, like, the amount of times I was ribbed should count as a felony. I honestly, like, even when I, like, it never stopped my entire life. Like, it that kept going even when I was around the boys, you know, in my early 30s, they would do stuff. But you know, that world was very loving to me. It was very calm. It wasn't the version you saw on television. I saw these guys as human beings. When I sat with Bobby at WWE Hall of Fame, we talked about his daughter, you know? So it was just a very human experience.
Yeah. I work, well, not really what you call work. It's a small, independent wrestling organization. It's been around here for about, I guess it's been around about 6 or 7 years now. And I do camera work for them. And there's a lot of the guys that have been there since day one that come back, and you're exactly right. You see them as human beings when you're back behind the curtain or whatever. And, separating that from what you see in the ring is something else to see these guys. Cause the biggest heels you get backstage and they're the biggest teddy bears, you know, they're just nicest guys you'll ever meet. I mean, it's an act, but you still, it's funny. You said about your dad getting hit by the guy, and you talk about back then. I recently, at one of those events, we had a tag team turn heel, and they were the hometown guy they turned on. He was one of them they turned on. This lady, no lie, has a cane, hits one of the guys over top of the head while I'm sitting there, and I'm like, oh gosh, we're going straight back to the mid 80s here. This is like some 80s heat here. And she popped him on the head with it. And he got backstage. And we were talking about it. He was like, did you see that lady hit me in the head with a cane? And I was like, yes, I did. Definitely. But
and what he should have said was, I did my job.
Exactly. He did what he was talking about.
Yeah. If they didn't get the heat and if the darts didn't come, like, that is their badge of honor, right? Yeah. That was not like they're complaining. That was, here's what I accomplished. They were so mad. They threw a dart in the ring, and if we knew who it was, they would have gone to jail. Like, that still was a felony, and those, you know, those people get arrested in baseball stadiums. Here's the thing. The human psyche, in the right element, in the right moment, can buy into anything. And this generation still does. Do not kid yourself. Because even grown adults will sit there and argue about wrestling matches that just happened last week. Like, and they're caught up in, the sad part is, I think a lot of them, they're caught up in the drama as if they're part of the business. Right. And I'm not like, they had some very, very, I think, unsavory names for people, you know, back in the '80s, you know, these guys, the way they, you know, whether it be called a mark or, you know, they called women ring rats, you know, those aren't things that I'm happy or proud to talk about. When I never heard my dad talk like that. I didn't know. In fact, I don't remember hearing anybody say mark until I got older and it was another wrestler. And I'm like, what? Like, cause there were words, like, I remember at a young age, dad taught me carny. And it was only because, he used to speak that, cause he wasn't a great speller. So he would talk to my mom that way to talk about things in front of me that, so I didn't know. And then I figured it out and he was like, well, I guess I'll teach you the rest. But you know, dad loved his fans, good or bad. Like, he loved it when you hated him. He loved it when you loved, like, and it wasn't till after he passed that I remember saying to somebody, one, because when he passed, like, your family goes about their day. You know, my kids went back to college. Like, the world didn't stop. Right. But we started those legacy pages. And let me just tell you, the fans are the ones that checked on me 3 months later, 6 months later, a year later. I think of O'Neill Walker, a pastor out of Canada. I think he's in Ontario. Adika Butler out of New York. His name's escaping me he's out of Australia. It's going to break my heart. I can't remember his name. But today, when you see, you'll see it on social media, just the bickering and they're like, and I don't mean this in a mean way, but like, I'm not a mark. And I'm like, well, you kind of look like one, because like, it's like, you're talking about it creatively, but you're still arguing. Like, why are you emotionally connected to and fighting for an agenda that, you know, for a fact is entertainment and is planned and scripted.
Right.
But even kids today, you know, they get caught up in reality TV shows as if that's, you know, they're real. And it's no, to me, you know, the wrestling was the birth of, was, is the great, great grandfather of the Kardashians. You know, like that's the evolution, but people still believe it. And they, and to so much that now they question what is real. So what's funny is they will get caught up in the emotions of wrestling, and I'll see that. And then the next second I'll see how they're, you know, the NFL scripted. And I'm like, you know, you believed in things that aren't real, and you question things that are right. And so I think it really is a reflection of society, of critical thinking and, you know, kind of this emotional balance we should have and what's important. At least that's what it is for me, having grown up with it. Dad put that stuff in perspective. And so I've always understood, even though I've had my own issue, I've always understood not to get involved in that, in the bickering about it, and not the, you know, just enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah, exactly. I'll tell you this, going a little bit off subject, about some of the older generation. My grandma moved in with us. She had some strokes, and she moved in with us while I was still, well, I may have been getting ready to graduate high school. And she had some breathing issues and stuff like that. But I could go in the room with her, and she'd be over there just like, it looked like she's struggling. And I was like, "Grandma, do you mind if I watch wrestling?" She's like, "No, I don't mind." And within 20 minutes, especially if it was Ric Flair, my grandma was a Christian woman. The only time I've heard my grandma cuss was at Nikki Newman on Young and the Restless, and Ric Flair. She called Ric Flair, "You son of a bitch." And but yeah, that stuff like that. Oh, look at that dog.
Yeah. This is my baby. I love you too. I love you too. She like, yeah, she's my baby. She's beneath my feet whining, and I'm like, I know I'm not going to make it the whole hour.
She's fine. I got one back here right behind me. You see her back there in the chair.
Right? Yeah, this one's a Dachshund, so you can see what.
Oh, she's a loving dog. I can tell.
Yeah, this is my baby. This is my baby.
Like a dog, man. Nothing.
No. I was telling them, I had a photo the other day, and somebody was like, "Oh, her eyes." I'm like, if I get a woman to look at me like this, I'm settling in. Exactly. I don't want one that licks my face. it's funny you say that, because going back to those cuts and bruises that Dad had in Shreveport, Louisiana, all of them were for grandmas. And I remember one time, and I was really young, but I remember it. A woman had attacked him and apologized. Like here's the funny side of this. That would happen. They would come to their senses probably after church, and then they bring them a pie. You know, seriously, that was not uncommon.
Pies would take care of everything.
Baked goods were brought to the ring more often than, you know, underwear. Let's just put it that way. And I remember this time, this woman that had attacked my dad, you know, apologized to him, and then ended up inviting us to go to her bee farm. And so, you know, the first thing they said was, "Don't slap at him." So the first thing I did was slap at him. And I got stung, and she took that snuff out of her mouth and put it on there and put a Band-Aid on it. And I'm like, what just happened? Because I, at the time, I don't remember if my dad was dipping or not. That was about his only vice was dipping. But I remember, like, you know, this older grandmother just taking that snuff out and putting it in. I'm like,
I've had it done myself, my great aunt. Yeah. And it worked too.
Oh, it absolutely worked, but it also absolutely grossed me out. Right. Like, I didn't grow up in a trailer park in Florida. Yeah. So Dad was like, "Yeah, that's normal." And I'm like, "Not for me. I go to Montessori school. We're studying, you know, Africa and Japan. I just learned a little bit of French. You know, I'm this bougie little kid. And, but you know, those, those stories of those fans and things like that, man, they were real people. And I was at a show. I went to an independent show. I don't get out much. I've had some physical problems over the last few years, surgeries and stuff. And so I went to a show, and Diamond Dallas Page was there doing autographs, and I know him. And so I'm standing over in the corner with his wife, just kind of chit chatting. And by the way, they are amazing people. There was a guy that came in that was struggling with his weight and his health, and like he wanted to ask questions about the yoga. And this is something you can go online and sign up for. Paige stopped our conversation mid sentence and goes, "I got to go take care of this," and sat there and talked with that guy for half an hour, walking him through how to step. You know that. So there are some really good those two people. Whether you believe it or not, like yes, that's a business. But they do it with their heart.
I am so glad to hear that, because he seems like such a genuine guy when you see him, not doing the wrestling thing, but when he helped Jake out, when he helped Scott Hall out, it seems like a genuine thing. And you know, of course, with society the way it is now, oh, he's just doing that for the camera. I'm glad to hear that, because I was like, I don't think that's just for the camera. I think you. Being a genuine guy.
They invited me down after I had my spinal fusion, and there wasn't any cameras on. They were like, "Hey, reach out. If you need me, reach out." Like, he gave me a cell phone number. Like, that's not, and I've seen him do that with other people, not just wrestlers' kids. Right. I'm 45. So the wrestler's kid title kind of fades after a little bit.
Yeah.
And so anyway, they were there, and there was somebody in line. And you can say wrestling's fake. You can say it's scripted. You can say all that. The emotions are real and the attachment's real. There was a young lady waiting in line to get his autograph. And I'm telling you, the only thing I could compare it to is what I think we'll look like when we find Jesus. That's how much joy that woman had waiting in line. And he took every moment with her, talked to her, hugged her. You know, and I'm like, I've never seen anybody that happy in my entire life. Yeah. And so, you know, wrestling is one of those funny things that even though it's got a bad guy and a good guy, there's a lot of good guys, yeah. Right? And there's a lot of positive that comes out of it, and they're a positive influence. And it's not, you know, it's very unfortunate what's come to light over the last few years, even though I think it's been, you know, a well-known secret for the last 40. But, you know, the people out there like Mark Miro and the people like Diamond Dallas Page. Mark Miro, I don't know if you know what he does. He goes and speaks at the high school. He's one of the he's a motivational speaker to young students. He talks about his story of trials and tribulations. And so, Dad... what I figured out about Dad, and it was way later in life, because growing up I couldn't stand fans, and it was simply because you took my dad away. Like, I wanted his attention, which, you know, looking back, that's selfish me, and I'm a selfish kid and self-centered and egotistical. Like, no. I mean, it's like something you got to reflect on and go, because here's what I realized, you know, just in the past few years after he passed, and you know, the compassion that I saw from those fans and the human side of how much they loved him and how much, you know, he influenced their bodybuilding. I got a picture the other day from somebody, Drew Titan, on Instagram. He sent me a picture of, you know, was telling me how Dad motivated him and Tony Atlas motivated to get him in the gym. And he had a picture of him from when he was a kid, and he sent me the picture. And I'm like, how amazing is that, that these men influence people in such a positive way. But it was after that that, like, because they helped me get through, and I mean, like, if not for his fans, I don't know where I would be as a human being because of the level of depression I had after he passed. But it hit me one day. I'm like, wait a second. I owe my life to these people. They paid my dad's bills. They put me through private school. Mm-hmm. Every opportunity I've ever had in life, came from two sources, my father's upbringing and the fans that loved him and hated him. And so that kind of realization about my own life, it absolutely changed the way I saw everything, because it flipped me on a dime, having grown up with this kind of embedded criticism and negativity and even resentment. You know, it absolutely flipped. So what's funny is everybody wants to talk about to me, and I get it, what was it like being around these wrestlers? And I'm like, do you know what these fans are like? Let me tell you what they did. Because that, for me, has been the life-changing and instrumental in my own recovery. You know, somebody who's decided to be sober and given up alcohol, and like that came from the influence of other people, because I had quit drinking for years, and I'll say I had it halfway under control in the sense that I wasn't going to work and doing anything like that, but it was definitely a six pack a day after he died. And it was those fans that encouraged me and helped me get out of a very, very dark place. So, you know, when we do these pages and we get to show my dad stuff, like I put my heart out there and I respond to the messages because I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful. Like, you loved him, but I love you. And that's the way my dad loved him as well.
Yeah. And talk a little bit about these legacy pages you got out there. Cause there's I'm sure you got the one on Facebook. Where can they find these legacy pages at?
So there's Mr. Wonderful Official on Instagram. We've got Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff. I think it's PAU1 Orndorff. Simply because, you know, you would be surprised what people will try to do and imitate. There are people that pretended they were like my nephew, you know, pretended to be my dad. Like it was pretty disgusting. But so we have Facebook. That's, you know, Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff. You know, he's got his own X page, or, you know, formerly known as Twitter. And then we got the Instagram, and probably the nugget that most people really don't know about is he has his own YouTube page, and we have compiled, I think we just, you know, for me, I could care less about the likes. I recently had posted something, you know, something I was grateful for, which, is, that's just where I'm at in my life of after things I've been through, is I have a lot of gratitude and love. Right. And I'm in peace and joy. So I'm very happy that, but I posted something on Twitter X recently and was floored at the number of views it gets. And number one, what I tell you is I was so grateful that gratitude was trending, because all I did was say something I was thankful for. Right. And so I could count on my hand how many negative comments we've had on those sites in the past 2 years. And I think it's, in fact, what I usually get is, Travis, this is so wholesome. Travis, this is so positive. I get that from my family members, and I'm like surprised to hear it. They're like, I look forward to this because every day it's something good and the way we bring it to the world. But his YouTube page, I don't know how many thousands of hours that have been viewed. It's crazy, but we have matches from the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s up until he broke his neck at WCW.
Yeah. He was such an incredible performer. People don't realize what a big part of history, you go back and look at it. People don't realize he was in the main event at the first WrestleMania, which got mentioned on SmackDown by Triple H the other night. I know you had one of the pages had a post about that.
That's the one that got so many views, that post of me saying I was grateful that I heard my dad's name. Because for me, like, I genuinely don't care about the views. All I care about is the message that we're sending. Right. We want to send a message of hope, of gratitude, of faith. And so I'm very aware of the mistakes I've made in the past and the power of my words. And now that we have this platform where I interact with people, because I don't do all the posts. Tyler Ellenick is the genius behind that. You know, I find the photos and the family photos, and I've done that. But the messaging, you know, the responses, the replies to different fans asking questions, those are me, right?
Right.
So I had no plan because it wasn't that popular on the other platforms. But I just wanted to say thank you. I genuinely just want to say thank you. And, you know, a couple 300,000 views later, I'm like, I sure am grateful. I was grateful. Like, like, what if I had said something negative? And I wouldn't, cause that's just not who I am anymore. But, you know, those sites are, they're my heart. They're my dad's heart. And, you know, his work speaks for itself, his intensity, his passion, even, you know, what I'd say younger fan, I'm not playing ball with you right now, Eleanor. She's going to do it again. I can feel it. But when you, Eleanor, no, not right this second. You know, when I forgot where we were, what I was talking about, I got so tickled by that. This is what happens when you get older.
I tried to remember where we were at.
You know, that maybe I can and at least recap what I think what I was talking about. So she's still doing it.
I hear it. I know about that.
So she's like, Dad, get done. Those sites, they are my, at the beginning, they were my broken heart, right? Like they were, I said it this way, that was a love note to my dad. When we started these pages, all I wanted was for you to know who he was as a human being.
Right.
And like the intensity and the passion, like that stuff, younger fans today will see that and go, I haven't seen an intensity like that. And people will even reflect, that's, you know, like people will be like, dude, those punches look like they'd kill somebody. His craft, his athleticism, his passion, his anger, all this ball of emotion, like he left it all out there for people. And so, you know, as we do these pages, you know, that stuff speaks for itself. But, you know, for every person that's like, he was an amazing wrestler. I get to say he was a better father.
And that's what you want to hear. Just like I said that about DDP a while ago, I was glad to hear that. That's what I love to hear. And with these athletes in this world now, whether it's pro wrestling, whether it's football, whatever, how many times do you see a story about an athlete doing something good for, you know, cause, and how many times you see them want arrested? If one of them does something good, and I know most of the time, some of these athletes don't want it out there. They were like, I'm doing this on my own. I'm not doing this for attention, but there needs to be more talked about that.
That's the media though, because let me give you a prime example. You know who Cam Hayward is, right?
I know who Cam Hayward is. If you can see back here on this back wall over here, I am a diehard Steelers fan since I was 5 years old.
So I pay more attention to the Walter Payton Man of the Year.
Yes, sir.
And I can't remember the young man out of San Francisco that's been nominated 4 times, right? So, you know, especially more, at least in my opinion, more than ever, and I think it gets worse, you know, generally every day, it does something to the human soul to see somebody fail. But for every, my dad's best stories for me, the ones that get shared with me are the ones that I didn't know about, because I knew who he was to me. I knew how he treated me. But I also get to hear stories about like when he was, you know, very, very, very famous and very hated, and he was leaving a wrestling match and these 2 kids came up to get his autograph and he took them out for pizza and gave them a workout plan and signed autographs for him. Like, yeah, that didn't make the paper back then because that would have ruined the.
Oh, yeah, that would have ruined the whole kayfabe right there.
So when people, and I get this a lot, like, people go, I loved your dad as a wrestler, but let me tell you a story. It's like it's yeah. that the wrestling part has become secondary to them because of the way that he made them feel as a human being and the time he gave them. And so, you know, that really reflects how he raised me. Now, I wasn't always like that, so I had to go through my own trials and tribulations. But you're absolutely right. But there are amazing, amazing men. John Cena, what he, the number of times he went to the Make-A-Wish Foundation. You know, that story doesn't get the likes, which is why when I do what I do, I could care less about the likes. I don't even look at the number. Like, I know they exist. And if I, in fact, the only reason I ever hear about one that does get, you know, so-called, you know, popularity, it's because somebody tells me, because I don't go back and like look at what I just wrote. I already know what I wrote. Why would I go back and read it again? And then somebody be like, dude, did you see how many, did you see this? I'm like, of course I don't. What happened? And then I'll go back and maybe check it out. And I'm like, oh, but like, I remember the morning I woke up, I had gone to bed and Tyler, who is our admin, texted me. He's like, dude, you're not going to believe that Twitter post is blowing up. And I was like, I'm so glad it was something I was grateful for.
Right.
Exactly. Right. And then, so like the next morning I got another text to look at it, and I need reading glasses. So I woke up and I looked down. And I'm like, there's no way that's right. I put my reading glasses in and it's like 130,000. Wow. And I'm like, wow. But here's the truth of it. I put my phone down. I went and made my coffee. I did my meditation. I got on my knees and prayed. It didn't change my day at all. And I didn't like repost it. And, you know, like it's a cool story, but the cool part of the story for me was that it was because I said I was grateful for something. And I believe God speaks through those things. And so if that's the message behind his pages, which I believe it is, because at the heart of it, it's the heart that my father wanted me to have. And my heart's on display just like his was. It might have been in wrestling, but what you saw was his passion, energy, and love.
And you could definitely tell it. I'll tell you a story. The wrestling organization I work for, they know, you know, after about the third or fourth event they had, my dad, who, you know, we talked a little bit about, he had passed away. He struggled for about 20 years with heart issues. I mean, he had a valve blow off his heart. He had anything that could have happened. Well, one of the wrestlers who was a heel, his name was Benjamin Banks. He found out my dad wasn't able, because they had the wrestling matches right at a school right across the street from where my dad lives. And he found out he couldn't make it that night. He had just got out of the hospital. So he goes over there before the matches with a signed poster of the event and takes pictures with my dad, putting him in the headlock. And, you know, and he still talks about that to this day. It'll pop up on my Facebook memories. And he's like, that's one of my favorite memories of working in the business right there. I mean, that's stuff like I want to see, just like with your dad, those stories, like you talk about with the fans, with your dad that you wouldn't have heard back then. I'd love to hear stuff like that. Because it just tells you what kind of guy your dad was.
But you know, I'm going to give credit to somebody else. So, you know, Joe Hamilton Jr., Nick Patrick.
Yes.
So Nick Patrick runs
Deep South Wrestling.
And so I had like messaged him one day, you know, because I think I got a funny story real quick about, and I'll come back to Nick. But when I was younger, we were in St. Pete, and, you know, that's a easy drive. So I went down with Dad, and Stevie Ray from Harlem Heat came over and like came over thinking I was Jeff Gordon. And I had hair, right? So he's like, man, from far away, I thought you were, he's a big NASCAR fan. So, you know, the other day I get to interact with these guys and they remember me, and I have these, you know, these little nugget of stories and times and connections. And you know, I messaged him like, hey, do you remember when we were in St. Pete and you thought I was Jeff Gordon? And he responded, he's like, funny enough. And he's like, you know, God rest your father's soul. The first thing that went through my mind when your dad passed was, I wonder if his son still looks like Jeff Gordon, you know? But, you know, so I have those times where, again, they're so human, and they're such sweethearts. Like, if you really want to know, a lot of them are just gentle giants. Yeah. But, you know, when I was younger, you know, during the WCW days, stuck in the back, you know, early 90s and or, you know, mid 90s. And, you know, I'm at this point, I'm old enough. Nobody's got to really watch over me. And, you know, Nick comes over and puts a guitar in my hand. It was the first time anybody had put a guitar in my hand. And, you know, I got to go see him at Deep South Wrestling. And, it, you know, wasn't something that was imprinted on his memory, but it was imprinted on mine. And, you know, I just went up and I shook his hand. We chit-chatted for a minute. I said, man, I just want to tell you thank you. And he's like, for what? And I'm like, you don't remember this, but. And I told him, he goes, oh, my gosh, I do remember that. So we had a big hug and, you know, took a picture together. And so we keep in touch. And I hope he goes down and see them again. He does a really good job both promoting, and he looks out for those guys and girls like a father would, you know. So there is this world where, because some of it's been unveiled,
right.
You do get to see the impact these men have on people's lives from a personal side.
Right. You see, you get to see behind the curtain a little bit.
For sure.
Yeah. I'm not going to hold you up much longer.
You're good. You can edit it if you want. I'm good.
There was one, you know, just talking about, well, you know, I think we need to end it on that. I think what you said right then is the best place to end it at, because you did a good job with that. But just want to thank you. I know you got to get – I think I heard the ball again. So,
I'm not a big social media fan. Like I say, I'm not a fan. I use it, but I'm not like – it's not something I'm on all day long.
You have to.
But I ain't gonna lie, some of these Dotson videos they have on there, like, I'm like, that's her, you know. So, but Eleanor is my companion. She's she might be a little needy, but so am I, evidently. Oh, so yeah, and but yeah, like the funny thing she does, it's, you know, and I see these Dotson, they're the same way. It's absolutely her. Now, when my kids come over, she abandons me like nothing, like you'd be like, I don't exist. As soon as they leave, it's like, Dad, come on. What's going on? And I'm like, you haven't talked to me in 2 days, Eleanor. What's going on?
But anyway, I just want to thank you for taking time. I know you don't know me from anybody, but you didn't hesitate when I asked you to say you would come on. And I really, really appreciate that. And just want to let you know, and not blowing smoke or not saying it just because you're here, but your dad was one of those wrestlers that, I mean, as like I said, he was a better heel that you love to hate. And I learned it from saying something to Tully Blanchard a while back. I said, man, when I was a kid, I hated you. And the first thing he said to me, he said, then I did my job.
Well, yeah. Of course you're impressed. The whole world's impressed, Steven.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. Like I said, I was watching it. I watched a lot of Paul Orndorff over the weekend, and I mean, just
for
like
the record, that promo of him in the gym, that's really what it's like to work out with him, and I am not joking. Maybe not some of the derogatory comments, but yeah. Like, you're not doing it right. One more rep, like, that is I'm like, that is method acting. Like, I didn't work out for years because it was so traumatic. I couldn't, like, you talk about sore. Like, I would go home and ice down my body. It would be that bad. So some of that was absolutely real with a sprinkle of heel.
Yeah. And you know, I'll say this about your dad. Like I said, not blowing smoke. He doesn't get mentioned enough with how important he was to that era back then. Because, you know, you had the whole rock and wrestle explosion. He was in the main event at WrestleMania 1. The heel turn on Hogan. And I sat there and watched the Toronto match. And I know you said you're not a big historian, but that Toronto match, you look at that crowd out there at that match in Toronto, and that match is freaking awesome. When they think he wins the belt, and or better yet, how I would love to hear from somebody how on earth in that day and time, in what, 86, they pulled off the simultaneous hitting the floor at the same time on that cage match on Saturday Night's Main Event. Because you look at it and it's like they're both there at the same time.
I would say a couple of things. One is, so people know Hulk Hogan's run and they know of the Saturday Night Main Event. They don't realize how much time my dad and him spent together over like a 6 or 7 year span.
Yeah.
And how they tag teamed together in Japan. And, you know, there was a relationship prior to that, and love and hate, not everything that goes in and the egos and I'm not doing a work and blah, blah, blah. They were very much, you know, they were very much brothers, you know, as much as people throw out that word and it's become a joke of calling people, like they were very much like brothers. They fought, but they loved each other. And so when you, this is just my opinion, but when you work with somebody that much and you understand, I mean, I don't know the behind the scenes, if there was any, you know, manipulation or whatnot, but, I would just tell you, when I got to see them talk about their match, it wasn't even sentences. It was literally like, boom, boom, boom. We'll hit here and we'll do this spot and boom, boom. Like, duh, 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 duh. I mean, it wasn't like this. It was like its own language. They knew, you know, they knew what they were doing and how they were doing it. And so I think there's a couple things I would, you know, I said a couple things. That's one. The second thing is, you know, Dad, through some of his decisions, and things he did with Vince, that kind of put my dad in a situation where they didn't use him as much, because, you know, I'm not talking blackballed. I don't mean anything like that. But, you know, people assumed he'd be in the WrestleMania 40, like WWE game this year. And my opinion is there's some animosity, or was some animosity with Vince over some things that happened over the years. And so I think that's part of the reason that they didn't use him over time. And so he was kind of shelved even with that popularity, because he wrestled Hulk Hogan for the, I think somebody told me 11 or 12 times. More than anybody. So
half a year they feuded for half a year, and probably one of the most money making feuds of all time in WWF. I mean,
yeah, and I've mentioned my dad's mental health. He was volatile at times, and he was known to just walk off. So, you know, I hope and I pray that one day, you know, and it's not something, I don't stay up at night. I don't worry about it. You know, if God wants it to happen, it will. I've learned that. It only took me 45 years to learn it, but I've learned it. And if he is ever welcomed back to WWE, and they ever want to include him on those things, it would be great. But if they don't, what we have built and what I've shared, the heart he gave me and the heart that I can now give back to the people through the legacy sites, then, man, it's a good life lived, and I'm grateful.
And definitely his legacy will live on, and whether it's WWE wants to give him attention or not, the fans know, and that's for sure. I know I do. I know how important he was. And like I said, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule. And we will definitely be sharing a lot of the legacy page stuff on Triple Threat Main Event. And like I said, thank you so much. Appreciate your time.
You're welcome, Stevie. Guys, thank you for having me on, my friend.
Guys, that is Travis Orndorff on the Triple Threat Main Event. Three.
This is the son of Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, Travis Orndorff, the greatest athlete in the history of professional wrestling. And you're lucky to be listening to Triple Threat Main Event.
That's awesome. That is awesome.